7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 231 of Color of Magic, your Magic Gaming podcast, where we talk about all types of stuff that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. I am your host, Power Dragon, and for 231 episodes, the guy whose backyard I'll basically be in this weekend by the time you listen to this, Brian Sonic. How's it going, dude?
Pretty good. No major. Well, there'll be a couple of complaints, but those will be later in the show.
Fair.
The most part, it's just no major ones.
Yeah, a couple of quick bits of business too. If you're going to be, the weekend of the 16th, 17th in the Dallas area, come by the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. There's going to be tons of stuff to do, tons of artists, tons of vendors, lots of fun side events. I think last year, the year before, we even did a rock, paper, scissors championship. So you don't even have to be a super competitive Magic player. There's going to be stuff for, I believe, Pokemon, for Flesh and Blood, just like all types of stuff. You should come by.
Lorcana, I think, is going
to
be there.
Lorcana was on the list. So yeah, come by. All the money, you can get to help raise money for charity. That's going to be fun. There's a VIP party. You name it. You can check out the details at the HunterBurtonMemorialOpen.com. One other thing I want to touch on real quick before we get to stuff. It was pointed out to me that I may have possibly been come off a little dismissive last week. So I'm going to own that one. But I want to be clear in the fact of, like, it wasn't to be dismissive to anybody with any type of issues when we're talking about the tournament stuff. It's that more that having been on both sides as a player and an organizer, and even working for Wizards at one point, helping set up some events, this has just been an ongoing problem, and I just don't think that we need to have high-level events at conventions a lot of times, unless the convention is willing to pay extra money for those events to be separated. And so far, historically, except for in the case of maybe the Pro Tour itself being the giant promotional event that it is, that kind of gets separate space. But really, at these conventions, nothing else does or ever has in those high-level, high-dollar events, which is unfortunate because I don't even have any type of auditory attention issues, you know, and it bothers me. So I know it's got to be worse for people that do have issues. So I'm not being dismissive of them at all. Like, that's a real problem, 100%. Just having been in the situations that I'm in, I don't know if there's even a solution to that problem or if the companies are ever going to do anything for a solution to that problem, because it's existed as far as for the entirety of gaming, as far as I know. So it just sucks that that's a thing that you kind of have to decide if it's worth even playing in those or not. And me personally, I've just forgone even playing in those events when I go to conventions just because of the experiences in the past. But yeah, not to be dismissive of anybody's problems. Like, those are legit real issues and real concerns, and no doubt it's worse for people with real problems. But I just want to put that out there. That being said, if you would like to support the show, first off, we're looking for another sponsor. I'm talking to some people, but hey, if you want to be on the show, you want your name on here, reach some people, a couple thousand people a month, then hey, hit us up. We're willing to do business. But if you want to help us out in lieu of having some sponsors for the time being, hit us up over on Patreon. You go to Patreon, blah, 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 I got to talk. Hit me up over at patreon.com/colormagic. And just for $2, you can help us out. We really appreciate it, especially while we're in between having to have some extra sponsor money and whatever. You'd be doing us a big favor. And you can sometimes just get a shout out like, well, we have a Patreon that just goes by Al. He has his other last name in there, but the name he has posted is Al. So we're just going to say thank you, Al, because I'm not going to put anybody's extra info out there that they don't want out there. But you can also
if you'll be his bodyguard, he will be your long last pal. Sorry, I had to.
Oh, there you go. There you go. But yeah, hit us up over at Patreon. We could really use it right now to help us out a lot. Really appreciate that. But let's get into our lead story, which people might freak out about when I say these words, so brace yourself. People are going to pucker up a little bit, but there's a good chance AI is going to be coming to Magic and Dungeons & Dragons. Now, it's not what you think it is, But there was a recent interview with Chris Cox, who's the CEO formerly of Wizards of the Coast, now of Hasbro, as of the last few years. He did an interview with VentureBeat where they asked some typical CEO question, you know, about business, growth, plans, all that stuff. But they did bring up the subject of artificial intelligence, because effectively it's everywhere at this point, right? Like, it doesn't matter what you do, what TV shows you watch, where you shop, like, pretty much everybody's going to be using some version of it. Hell, even as content creators, we're all using some version of AI to generate captions or use special effects in videos or whatever it is. Heck, anybody watching this show on YouTube, I've probably used some amount of AI to speed up the editing and put it up there. So it's everywhere. But there's an interesting thing he pointed out. He used a couple of examples, particularly one where I believe he said during the month of October, so leading up to Halloween, they used AI to generate like some type of digital Ouija board or something that people got to go online and have some fun with. And that went over really well. And then for, I guess there's a National Trivia Month or something, they had AI generate a bunch of questions that people could answer for Trivial Pursuit. And you can go on every day and play a Trivial Pursuit thing or whatever. And not only was that super popular and well-received, it increased the sales of Trivial Pursuit by 30% that month or over the next 4 weeks or whatever. So they're thinking about how can we use this with our other products and our other properties, if not to generate sales, at least generate interest and keep it in public mind and do some fun stuff with it and build those positive connections. So it makes sense that they're going to try to do something with D&D and Magic, whether that's finding ways to integrate those characters into fun, weird games you can play online, or some way to, you know, you're looking up history on them and you can have a conversation with one of the characters or something. Like, I don't know. There'll probably be something they figure out they can do. Because he did acknowledge, like, hey, we do know there's a responsibility. You know, when you're talking about taking care of the human aspect as far as writers and artists and whatever. And they acknowledge there's already been issues, you know, we've talked about and they know about with the art stuff. So they don't want to go there. But it's what other ways can you use AI to help promote stuff? And even Mark Rosewater has said, like, there's a world where AI will probably be able to help them with card development or with testing or whatever, right? They're obviously going to try different things if it can speed up your job or help you organize information or whatever the case is. AI is just going to touch everything at this point. I mean, you play a bunch of different games. I'm sure AI is going to be used on some level as far as rankings or tracking who's doing what, or, you know, it's going to be used who knows how many different ways. And we've come a long way from when people started paying attention to AI to now. It's only been about a year and a half. And the developments have been happening at warp speeds. So there's no telling where this is going to end up.
Yeah. Or if it's going to be good at the end, because you heard Tyler Perry is talking about using AI. Because what are the you know, things people are saying in terms of movies? Well, you know, somebody like Scorsese would never use AI, or, you know, so Christopher Nolan wouldn't do that. Tyler Perry, absolutely. If he could figure out a way to push a button and make 27 movies at once, that's something Tyler Perry would absolutely do. So, yeah, it's out of the bag, so to speak.
But even with movies, I guarantee you those editors are going to be using AI for different stuff. I'd be shocked if they're not. Like, there's just too many little small things that these programs have figured out how to do to just speed stuff up. Now, to your point, Tyler Perry would love having 15 projects going at once. So if anybody's going to, like, really leverage it, he'd be one of the people.
Written, directed, produced, scripted, acted by a robot. Madea 2.0 is happening.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. Like, you know, does it bother me that statement was made? No, because I get it. Like, we see it everywhere, and it's just going to continue. I'm already to the point that I'm beginning to wonder if there's anything already that's on any level of scale that isn't touched by AI now. It feels, if there is, it's a very small number of things. Like, everything from just machine stuff, like I said, to editing stuff, like, just so many things. Like, it's hard to think about a world where things wouldn't be using it. But it's also a broad definition of AI. as well, right? I think that's part of the other thing too. AI, each person who thinks about a different thing where that's concerned. Because for some people, AI really is art, right? It's generating images, generating footage, and that's why they hate it. But it's also like, yeah, but AI also can help with translations, and it can help with captions, and it can help with this, and it can help with that, right? So it can be used a bunch of different ways. But yeah, I don't know. I could see some worlds where you can make some fun, interactive stuff with Magic and D&D that could you have a human element? Sure. But like I said, the idea that like maybe you saw, I don't know, let's say whatever the D&D 2 movie is or whatever, and they want to do a fun thing online where you can have a conversation with the characters. Well, you can't really have a person do that, right? Unless you're going to have people just sit there and try to answer 1,000 people at one time, you know, probably not really going to work. So AI could work for something like that and still be raising the interactive level and the brand. And I think that's safe. But what else will they do with it? Who the heck knows? I think it's I don't think it's in Uncanny Valley territory yet, but we're probably also not far from it, the way things are developing. So yeah, I don't know what to make of it, man. How do you feel about, I guess, AI in the games that we like, but even just in general, just affecting gaming and entertainment?
It's just, there are so many almost science fiction level things where, you know, each thing a computer learns to do, you may not need a human to do. So it's, I mean, I'm scared I'm going to show up for the podcast one day and there's going to be a robot sitting in my chair. This is my first concern, because we just kind of went to war with this as part of the whole screen actor strike. And then apparently there was some kind of negotiation made on behalf of video game voice actors. And some of the biggest voice actors are saying, wait, we didn't sign off on this. Nobody talked to me, but somebody at the Screen Actors Guild said, yeah, you can. We're going to create a database of actors' voices, and the video game voice actors are fine with it. And they were saying, nobody talked to us. So big people like the actress' voices, Ash Ketchum, who obviously, if Ash from Pokemon had been consulted, who exactly did you talk to?
Yeah, that's a real thing. You know, and voices are definitely something you can replicate.
Exactly. That's going to be, you know, it's kind of a frightening territory right now.
I mean, we've already seen how well we've gotten with the presidents play games or whatever. Exactly. That thing is. And you can tell they're not the people, but they're close.
Right.
You know, they're close enough that if you're listening and passing, you could be like, oh yeah, that kind of sounds like Obama. That kind of sounds like Trump. That kind of sounds like Biden. Right. So, I mean, I could see where that would be passable for a lot of people for animated shows or whatever, or voiceovers for, I don't know, March of the Penguins 2 or whatever the hell it ends up being, right? Like,
and now you're seeing people who had to put on their videos, hey, not AI, this is me, a comedian, actually doing impersonations. And some of the actual comedians that do impersonations aren't doing as well because, you know, you can, again, even if you do a great impression, you probably don't sound as much like them as a robot that's been programmed, you know, with their voice patterns.
Unless you're Jay Farrow. Apparently
Jay Farrow, I think I could tell the difference between like Denzel Washington and Jay Farrow.
Oh yeah, he has a couple of good ones. He does pretty well. His Kevin Hart's really good, and his Will Smith is pretty close, but you can tell. He does a good 50 Cent I saw the other day too, which was actually pretty dead on, which was kind of crazy. But yeah, it's a tough thing, you know, when we talk about games, about how will all this stuff be integrated? Because like you're saying, in video games, it could end up being voiceovers, and you won't even know if your actual favorite voice artist actually got paid or not. You know, they got paid, but they wouldn't have got top level because they just reused their voice or whatever, right?
Or we're going to see a point. We'll see a point where somebody doesn't get paid. They just kind of jack their voice and then dare you to go to court to prove that's your voice. Because think of how many actors and actresses we have already that, you know, we have a hard time telling apart. Like all the Chris's in Hollywood, where we joke about how we can't tell all of them apart. What if, you know, a robot is doing Chris Evans' voice, and Chris Evans now has to go to court every time somebody's... You're already seeing it on YouTube, or, hey, this is The Rock, and if you want to make $1 million, you should do... And it's obviously not anything The Rock would ever be associated with, but that's how these scams work. You don't have to fool everybody. You just have to fool 1% of the people.
Oh, dude, they've already had Mr. Beast ones come out. We're like, right? Oh, you do this thing, go to this website. I'm going to be giving away whatever it was, like $5,000 to 20 people or whatever. And of course, some people. And dude, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't even good. Like, I mean, you literally could look at it and be like, it's obviously not Mr. Beast, but enough people thought it was close enough that they scammed some folks.
Yeah.
Right. Even when, remember, and this is before it was good. Yeah. That's the thing.
Every day, people across the world fall for these Nigerian prince emails, or your daughter is in custody here, send us $1,000. Every day, thousands of people fall for these. You would think there's no way, but people wouldn't keep doing these cons if nobody ever fell for them.
Dude, one time, every time I get one, I'm like, hey, I'm willing to do this, but I need to know I could trust you first. So if you'll send me $500 to this address, then I give them a post office box, but they never send. They never send. But one time, one of them's going to send, and I'm going to feel like I won. Mm-hmm. But seriously, I think the other thing, too, we got to talk about where AI is concerned, which is a real thing. Is whenever you start thinking about AI, that's the worst it's ever going to be. Right? Even when we're talking about like that bad Mr. Beast video or whatever, like nothing will ever be worse than that. So if that already fooled people, what's the stuff that somebody makes in 6 months going to do?
We're already having Biden robocalls all over the country for elections. And again, those are.
Yep.
Some people are being fooled. That Biden told them to stay home for the Democratic primaries. Again, you ain't got to fool everybody. In the case of these elections, you may just need to fool 15 or 20 people for your candidate to cross the finish line.
Oh, especially when you're talking about older people, because they don't know. They're right. The furthest disconnected from technology.
Yeah, a lot of them don't know what AI is. If somebody that sounds like Joe Biden calls them, tells them not to vote for this person, hey, it was President Biden or President Trump. This is happening on both sides.
But I will say this, on the positive end, if you can use it to create more interactions, more awareness, build your brands, do all this, I'm for that. There's probably some world where you could do a crazy thing to turn your neighborhood into a digital monopoly board or something, right? And each person's house could be a different thing. And that's probably pretty cool. I don't know if it's possible yet, but maybe one day, and that's a way they could market more Monopoly or whatever, or Monopoly Go or whatever it happens to be. So I could think of lots of cool things you could do with different brands, but it really becomes easier to do or makes more sense with AI, just because they might be short-term activations that just wouldn't make sense to even pay people to do, they did the trivia thing or the Ouija board thing. You're only going to be doing that for 3 weeks. So it's an activation. Cool. Done. You move on to the next project. So yeah, I don't know. This is something though to keep an eye on, something to talk about, but it will be coming. I don't think it'll be, at least in our space, as far as Magic and D&D players, I don't think it's going to be something that's greatly noticeable to us. Because again, they made it aware that we still want to use human writers, we still want to use human artists. So the stuff we like is going to stay mostly the same. But I think the stuff we see outside of the physical products will probably include some level of AI to produce those things or create those interactions. But yeah, I'll be interested to see what they do with it before I really judge it. Because it's a fine line, to get it right or be entertaining or bring people in without upsetting your current base. Especially when we're already sensitive to the things that AI could do, being nerds, right?
And the company just having laid off, a couple hundred people. I'm sure they spaced it out as best they could, but it's not a great PR look.
That's also true. But all right, let's hop into the soapbox because we got a couple of things here. And the first thing for me that I want to get on is just explaining to people that content is so much harder than you think it is. And I'm bringing this up because there's been a lot of comments recently I've seen different creators talk about where people have rolled into their YouTube comments or posted something to him on Twitter, just basically saying like, oh, well, you should just make more of whatever. Or if you need more money, just make 3 more videos. Or if you like this, just do this. And it's just like, it's not really how it works. Like, using myself as an example, and I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I try to keep a notebook next to me where I just write down ideas throughout the month. And what I started realizing is by the time we get to the end of the month, I'm throwing away like 10, 12 ideas because they're not going to be timely, right? Like if I can even get to them eventually, it'll be where they're worthless and, you know, the moment's passed to even make the thing where it's relevant. So I had to start working with an editor just to even get enough of the short form stuff out there or whatever on the budget I could. Otherwise, I'm just throwing ideas out the window. And when you're telling somebody, especially somebody who's not grown yet and they're still starting out, to just like, oh, just make this and just do that. Like, one, when do they find the time? Like, that's my first issue, is just like, time is already at a premium. But then if you like somebody's work, I'll use somebody like Ristic Studies. Anybody who watches his stuff on YouTube is fantastic. Or Remy, who does like the Magic Song parodies where he does all the costumes and everything. Like, if you like that level of content, they can't just automatically start producing 2 or 3x that. Like, you like their content because they're at such a level from the amount of time and dedication and research and everything that goes into it. In some cases, producing art or music or whatever, right? That takes time. You don't just magically just go, okay, well, I have an idea for a video. I'm going to throw it up there and it's going to be the greatest video ever, right? Because otherwise you're not going to watch it, or you're going to insult them for their quality being crap, but you still want them to produce the same thing just faster. And on top of that, that's not counting having to get sponsors and having to promote yourself, having to have good mental health days and just deal with all the idiots who want to come on and insult you or trash talk you or whatever the case happens to be every day, right? That's all part of the problem. So it's like, and I'm not saying, hey, this is a first world issue, right? I'm not sitting here saying, oh, woe is me or whatever. Like, I've had other jobs. Hell, I've run another business. I know what it can be like. But just to not, it's just amazing to me, I think, in this day and age, with the amount of content that's out there, and as many things we've shown about how to make content and people showing behind the curtain or whatever, that folks, especially if you're under 30, still don't understand how difficult it can be to make content. Hell, we see people all the time who try to get into Twitch or YouTube or whatever and just give up in a month because they can't get any views or nobody ever watches them or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it's not just turn on a camera and start talking. Like, there's a whole thing that goes into it. There's research, there's planning. You got to get artists for logos and whatever. And like, it's a whole process. So it's just like, just a reminder that when you're going to go take shots at somebody that's making content, hell, to be honest, even bad content takes time. I mean, like, being real about it. Even the stuff that isn't great still might have been somebody's best effort while they're learning. You know, and we do have to keep that in mind. So just give a little grace to your creators. That's all I'm saying. But all right, you're up.
Yeah, if you're a wrestling fan, you've probably seen this graphic that talks about the various champions. Like, Bruno Sammartino had the belt for 2,800 days, defended it 600 times, so on. You get to the bottom, and Roman Reigns has had it for 1,288 days, like at the time they posted this, and has defended it 54 times. But of course, I guess the thing they're trying to create is some kind of outrage, like, oh my God, why are we not getting more title defenses from Roman? And when you start talking about, you know, when you start talking about how many times somebody took a chair shot to the head, it's helpful to remember that more than half of the guys, even that Daquan and I grew up watching as kids, are dead now. And in some cases, have been, I think it's WrestleMania 5, something like 40 or 50% of the guys that worked that pay-per-view are dead. And that's, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Talk about giving people grace, really. I think people tend to forget that, yeah, it's not an athletic competition. It's a TV show. If the actors from Stranger Things are being forced to work 16 hours a day, 300 plus days a year, you would have a problem with, I hope you would have a problem with that. And you'd say something, and you'd be right to say something. And we really got to start treating our, in this case, sports entertainers the exact same way. Roman is the star of a TV show. And he's also, as people, some people probably forget, a leukemia survivor. I don't care how many times he defends his fictional title, which again is a prop. It's the Infinity Gauntlet. It's, you know, it's the MacGuffin, you know, that drives SmackDown, so to speak. I don't need him to be on every show. There's no reason for that, especially if I know even if Roman defends a belt against, I don't insert Mid Carter here. I know he's not losing to that person on SmackDown. I don't need to see that. I don't need 300 of those. Keep my wrestlers healthy, alive, and as you mentioned with content creation, also mentally healthy as opposed to trying to hit some arbitrary number from an arrow and they didn't take care of wrestlers and they were all dropping dead and nothing was done about it.
Well, dude, you know, to piggyback on that, I think even in today's society, we have people who want to insult, say, like NFL players because, oh, well, this person wasn't willing to take a hit or this person wanted to take a game off or this person, whatever. But then, hell, not even that we grew up with. There's people we saw still playing as adults that are gone now, you know, from different types of depression, suicide issues, overdoses,
CTE.
Yeah, CTE, just all kinds of stuff.
NFL and wrestling CTE.
Yeah, so just like, man, if these people are taking time to extend the longevity of their careers and take care of themselves, I don't have any problem with it, right? Like, at the end of the day, even real competitive sports, it's for entertainment purposes. You know, like, at the end of it, these people still have to go on and live their life. Like, and for some of their careers, they only get to do that for, if they're lucky, 5 to 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's how much damage happened in 5 to 8 years that affects your next 30, you know, or 40 if you live that long.
Look how many athletes we're seeing. Like Andrew Luck was essentially in the prime of his career. Said, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm tired of the injuries. I'm tired of the rehab. I have enough money. I'm out.
Hell, we're there's seeing that one ball player. He left at halftime. He just quit.
Right?
Like, that was the weirdest story where he was just like, yeah, they said he's not coming back out of the locker room. He announced his retirement. And you're like, yo, what? It's like at halftime, he just said, F it all. I'm out of here. Right. You know, when it's your time, it's your time, I guess. Whatever
and
it takes.
Especially with something like NFL, you know, you can't go out there and go half speed because you'll absolutely get injured if you're out there not, you know, not taking care of yourself going against 300-pound linebackers. So, yeah, really just, again, if you enjoy, you know, they're watching them play, watching them wrestle, do whatever, actually let them take care of it. And if the company wants to do anything, because, again, it took wrestling decades to get to the point where they even kind of sort of acted as if they care about wrestlers' health. I'm happy that Roman Reigns and the last person to get these same complaints were levied at Brock Lesnar. I'm happy to see people not being worked till they fall down dead. And, you know, Roman even mentioned in the promo, hey, if I work half of the matches of somebody else and make twice the money, that just means I'm good at this. Yeah.
Hell, that's everybody's dream for their job, to be honest. Whatever it is that you do.
If you can get the same amount of attention, keep the storyline going half the time, why not?
But all right, let's get into some fun stuff that we learned this week, because I think both of these are kind of interesting. So you've got something to do with the really interesting video game thing. So why don't you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, Helldivers 2 is just kind of set the world on fire. It's apparently even more popular than Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Now, of course, that's a combination of Helldivers being really hot and Modern Warfare 3 having some problems with its campaign and things. Just, you know, when you do a game every year. But yeah, Helldivers is crushing it. It's kind of a, for everybody that's never played, it's very Starship Troopers inspired, where, you know, these brave space marines are fighting a bunch of weird looking insectoid aliens and battle mechs and other things. As a matter of fact, it's so popular that people are Starship Troopers has seen a rise in streaming because everybody that describes it says it's kind of like Starship Troopers. And again, you know, we're older than we used to be. Like my kids have been, well, what's Starship Troopers? And then people go and, because they'd never heard of it before, they go and look up Starship Troopers and watch it as they're playing or sometimes before they play Helldivers 2. So props to them. The rumors now that, you know, I think it's on on PlayStation, and you know, since console exclusivity is kind of going the way of the dinosaur, we may even see Helldivers 2 on Xbox at some point in the future.
You know, it's interesting because I haven't even played it at all, but I've seen Helldivers 2 pop up in discussion with a lot of different groups that I'm in. So yeah, it's definitely penetrating nerd culture to some level, because I've seen it in some different Discords. I've seen people talk about it on some streams. I've seen somebody post about it on Twitter, and they're not even in the same types of gaming groups. Right. So it must be popular enough that it's getting out there. But, you know, part of this, you say, you know, it's more popular than Modern Warfare, is like, part of that, do you believe also because you can always come back to Call of Duty, but like, you kind of want to be part of the hype of the hot game when it's hot?
Definitely something to that. And then, you know, actually probably, you know, some of it is people just may not want to come back. Maybe they just didn't enjoy Call of Duty this year. Because, you know, when games come out every year, some are just, I play a bunch of Madden, WWE, same thing happens. It's just WWE 2K20, for example, was a dumpster fire. They had to take 2 years off because it's hard putting something out there, especially in Call of Duty's case. They're starting to run out of wars. You know, they've been to World War II a million times. Vietnam, at this point, every major war the U.S. has been involved in has been depicted in Call of Duty, probably no less than, I mean, it's why we're doing Modern Warfare again. And now people are starting to notice the, you know, the just kind of, for lack of a better term, the just blatant jingoism in Call of Duty where, hey, America, three brave American soldiers are going to save the world by murdering, by the time this campaign is over, a couple of thousand brown people. You know,
it's going to be Call of Duty, take down the Bolivian drug lords or whatever.
Right. Like, oh, it's Bolivian drug lords or, you know, Russian terror. It's all, it's just, you know.
Call of Duty, we got to take out Martians in space.
They did. There was a sci-fi Call of Duty 1 year.
Really? I didn't know that. I was just making that up.
I think it was called Advanced Warfare, and I don't think it was really popular. It just felt like, hey.
I was literally just joking. I didn't know that was a real thing.
they did that because, again, they're running out of conflicts.
Well, yeah, when you're making them every year, like, you know, something's got to give. Okay, I have a positive one here. Now, this is going to sound a little silly, but we talk about how cynical people can be on the internet, and particularly how divisive and adversarial people can be on Twitter, or X, if you will. But just yesterday, background to this, I'm in a Magic for Beginners players group on Facebook, and just to be part of the community, share some stuff, answer some questions for people, you know. And one of the people in there runs a game store, and he posted a meme that's basically somebody that's in a big armor suit looking down on a player, a new Magic player. And then behind them, they're getting stuck with a bunch of arrows that are basically like, read the effing card, blah, blah, whatever. And he's just being polite and answering a question for the player, right? And the meme's basically saying like, hey, no need to direct all this stuff at a new player. They just don't know any better. Just help them out and send them on their way. And I was like, you know what? This is a positive meme. I'll share this. This is just like a good reminder. Just don't be a jerk.
Right.
And as of the time of this recording, it's got like 70,000 views. It's got a couple thousand shares. Like, people are talking about it. Everybody's liked it. There's a bunch of positive comments. I've gone and looked at the different threads where people have reposted it, and those are all positive comments. And I was just like, wow, this is something I just post just because I thought it would be neat, and it resonated with people somehow. Like, it just stuck with folks, I guess, but enough that it's creating a bunch of positive conversations, and people are talking about moments when they started playing and, you know, the things they try to do to help new players. And I was like, man, we can still do this. Like, the internet can still be positive. Like, Twitter can still be positive. I don't know how we made it happen, but it's cool that it happened. Yeah. I probably couldn't replicate it if I wanted to.
You
got to scroll
through some, you know, probably weird ads to get to it, but still. The people on the internet making it happen.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely not something I I would have even considered. I thought maybe it'd be like a typical thing, get a couple thousand views, few people might like it, and then we're just going to go on. But no, it's been a really positive thing. So that's one of those moments to me that's a little more, I don't know, reassuring maybe is the word. Yeah. They're like, all right, there's still a bunch of good people in the community and everybody still wants it to be good and people are trying to be good. And it's just cool to see that many people really excited about something like that. So, you know, I believe the person posted, by the way, is Burning Earth Games. So credit to them for even coming up with the thing in the first place. I just shared it thinking it'd be a positive, you know, bit of reminder to be out there to the world. But yeah, it was cool. I was glad to see it. Didn't even expect anything of it, but it's nice that it happened. So hopefully that happens more regular than not. But, you know, I know how the internet can be. But anyway, let's knock out a couple of quick topics. Here's one that's come up a little bit in the past, but I think because of the release of the Fallout set, we have this issue where the collector's boosters are now kind of extra short printed, because we already know, like, when collector's boosters get released, they don't print anymore. They're just whatever's out there sells, some being more popular than others. Some of them sit around for a while. You know, it sounds like with Fallout, Wizards went out of their way to reduce the quantity, just, you know, following recent numbers or whatever. And now people really want more of them because they're trying to get the rare, like, surge foils, I think, and the weird alternate arts, and but there's not going to be any more. So that got me thinking, okay, well, we're probably going to see prices rise on some of the stuff or whatever. But then it brought me back to another conversation that's been had since we started doing all these Universes Beyond things, is are we kind of creating at least a pseudo or mini reserve list, right? Because any of the stuff that's printed in world, we'll call it, for them, you can't really just reprint in a Magic set for a lot of reasons, but, you know, there are trademark and IP issues. And if your agreement has already run out, you can't just go printing their stuff in your game. Like, that's, they will obviously want money or compensation of some way. So you can't just do that. So they do have the option to print what we call Universes Within. And that allows them to make a Magic version of that card. The problem, though, is when that thing came about, we had secret layers where we're making 5 to 10 cards at a time, and it's easy to reprint those. But when you have a set like Lord of the Rings, or, well, any of these really that are just a full thing, where you're talking about Warhammer or Doctor Who or now Fallout, you've got like 50, 100 new cards, of which maybe 20 to 30 in each of those sets will likely need a reprint at some point. Because if you don't have the ability to reprint them, the price is going to keep going up until you make the Universes Within versions, right? Like from Fallout, you can't just make a Pip-Boy 3000, or in Lord of the Rings, you can't just print, I don't know, a Gandalf in a Magic thing, right? You have to make a special version to represent Gandalf. But, I mean, even if we do that every, let's call it 3 years or so, well, in the next 3 years, we're going to have way more Universes Beyond stuff come out. So there's always going to be something that's not being reprinted. Or let's say they make a set with 300 cards that are reprints. If something, let's say, from Lord of the Rings doesn't get reprinted in that set, well, then now that's just going to skyrocket, and it's going to have to wait till the next reprint that's another 2 or 3 years down the road. But then does it make it the cut into that one? Because in between, you'll now need to reprint the stuff from 2 Marvel sets, the Final Fantasy will be out by then, Assassin's Creed, you know, whatever. So it's an interesting thing. Like, and I don't even know if it's a bad thing, because again, in collectible stuff, some stuff's just going to be worth more. We know that. But I don't know how you prioritize which things get reprinted, how many from each set need to be reprinted. You know, is it okay to reprint stuff if you have like a 3 or 4 year Marvel license? Like, do you use that as a time to reprint stuff while you can? Like, there's going to be so many questions, I think, around this as we move forward. But I just don't think it was a major problem. And I don't even know if it's a problem, a major concern, until we started doing these large sets that include all these cards. And I think it kind of starts with Lord of the Rings, because that set has several cards that we'd like to see reprinted at some point in the future, I'm sure. The fortunate in that set, one of the best cards is Orcish Bowmasters, that you could literally just reprint in anything because it's an orc. So, like, you at least get away with that one. But, you know, you can't really make a One Ring. right? Like, that is just a Lord of the Rings thing. But eventually, if the card stays popular in so many formats, it's going to need a reprint somewhere. And I don't know, man. I don't know what we do about this or if it's even a concern yet. We have to kind of, this is one of those things you want to keep on the radar, but you kind of need to let a 3-year cycle or so play out to really find out what the ramifications are or what the reprint plan even is or what it looks like. But it's definitely something that, you know, if you see some hot cards that are specifically in universe for some of these Universes Beyond sets, you know, if you have a chance to trade for a couple or whatever, you might want to get some and sit on them till we see what happens. Or maybe hold them for a year or two, then get out of them when they are starting to peak before the reprints come. But yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting thing to watch. I think it's a few people have discussed this and it's starting to come up more and more as we get these more hot properties that we're starting to print way more cards for. But yeah, I don't know. Do you see this as even being a problem yet? Or is it something you're concerned about?
When I hear the words reserve list, I go play Lorcana or something else. I don't deal with it.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like I said, I'm not going to call it a problem yet. I think it's just a concern to keep on your radar for the most part. In other news, though, people are excited about Standard. We're starting to see, we talked about it before, a few more players starting to come out, a few more stores starting to run it. But what we're seeing is a lot more conversations starting to happen on social media. Some of the bigger personalities that are deck brewers are excited to brew stuff for Standard now. Hell, even guys like Kibler, who are, you know, Hall of Famers that have come around and gotten known for playing more Commander lately, he's been posting about, man, I played these 3-4 different decks in Standard and I'm having a blast or whatever. I'm going to probably start recording some content with it, you know. So while we sat and said, it doesn't seem like Wizards is doing much or whatever, like the plan is slowly happening. It's working. Now, will it continue to work throughout the year? I don't know. I think there's some stuff they still need to fix. I think we've had these store championships. We've had these standard challenges or standard showdown, I think they're called, where people are starting to show up for those, but they didn't really, like, you could tell those were created after the promos had already been created. Because they're not Standard-specific promos or things that would appeal to Standard players. They're Commander cards, they're Modern cards. You know, so it's like, I get it. You could almost have the excuse of trying to draw some of those players in so they'll try Standard. But realistically, they should be Standard-specific cards to get people excited to come in about them. And they've already gotten that feedback or whatever. But even with that, things seem to be working. The RCQs are doing well. I'm seeing lots of people post about things they're qualified in or, you know, some people have played their third or fourth tournament of the season. So I'm into it. I like when Standard's good. You know, I think, you know, when people are playing, it's good for the game. Wizard sells more cards. Honestly, more stores can deal in singles because the cards are easier to get and you can turn those around and trade them more frequently. So yeah, this is a positive for everybody, I think. It'll just be a matter of how long does this, I don't know, good time, good feelings, whatever, how long do they last? You know, because it's easy to, everything it feels like has a moment, you know, right? Like every game, every product, you know, whatever. It's like, okay, how long does this positivity ride? But for now, I mean, there's even been people saying that right now of all the formats, Standard is probably the most fun and diverse once you get in and start playing it. And I don't think we've said that for, hell, 2017, 2018 at least. So it's been a minute. You know, so it's cool to see that be a thing. So, hey, thumbs up to Wizards. Congratulations. Standard's actually slowly becoming a thing again. Now, and I also want to say, I don't think it's going to reach the peak. I don't think it's going to be back, you know, year 2000 Standard. I don't think we're ever going to get back to that.
Yeah, because, you know, it's just casual has expanded to the point where it's running everything and for the foreseeable future is going to.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I think casual has gotten much higher in popularity. I think just the way people approach the game is also different. You know, I think before it's like, oh, well, if I wanted to go play, I kind of have to play Standard because that's what everybody's doing. Cause all the FNMs were Standard and the PTQs were Standard and Nationals was Standard and whatever. So like everybody kind of had to play Standard. You couldn't really find a game. Now, you know, Modern, Pauper, Legacy, you know, whatever, like we have like 6 or 7 different formats that are all getting attention at the same time now. And obviously Commander being the biggest one. So yeah, I don't think it'll ever be back to the top, but it's cool that I think it can really have a solid place for a lot of people again. And we'll see what happens, I think, this year when rotation happens. Which, oh, that's a good thing. I want to call this out because this is something I noticed that I don't know a lot of people really were paying attention to. But the last couple of years, I did gripe about there being such a long gap from like April until September, October. We didn't have a standard set. We got like some Universes Beyond, Lord of the Rings. I think before that, it was the Baldur's Gate set or whatever during the summer, but not a standard legal set. What they've done this time is you'll still get that Universes Beyond set in the summer, but they moved the fall set, which I believe is going to be Bloomburrow, the one that's like anamorphic characters or whatever, to August.
Set for furries, yeah.
Yeah, but it's going to be in August, which is way different because it's been coming out late September, beginning of October, whatever, in that range a couple of times. So we moved it up all the way to like middle of August. So that's really good. So standard, while it will be stale slightly longer, it won't be a crazy amount of time because we're cutting a month, month and a half off of that possibly. So it's actually pretty cool that that's going to change stuff up a little bit. And when we get Thunder Junction, it's going to be a little bit bigger than normal standard set because they're adding 50 extra cards that were going to be in an epilogue booster. But we saw how bad that went over for March of the Machines. So they're just adding those directly into the set for Thunder Junction. So standard at least gets a bigger set to hold you over to now a shorter dead period, which should also help standard quite a bit. So hopefully, crossing our fingers here, that this works out the way we want. And then, I don't know if you heard this news, because I didn't see this until a little while before we started shooting, that Twitter, X, if you will, is out here promoting themselves as trying to be a video-first platform. You know, trying to say, oh, well, we're trying to get more people to share more videos, and we're seeing video views go up this long, and people are posting videos, they're watching longer. You know, they're trying to entice more people to post more videos. And I don't mind there being some videos on Twitter. I mean, that's just the nature of it. When it makes sense to use a video, use a video. But I kind of, and I think a lot of people feel this way. It's like the identity of Twitter has been, well, I mean, I was going to say it was originally 140 characters. Now it's 240 characters or whatever, 280. But it's a text first thing. Like images, sure, maybe even memes or whatever. But I don't know, man. Maybe your view is different. But I feel like for me, if we end up being a, I say we, like I have any investment in Twitter. If Twitter ends up being a video-first platform, like, why should we not just be using Instagram at that point? Because it's basically become that, you know? Unless, I just like to say, I don't know, maybe, how do you feel about it? Because, I mean,
it's not going to work. This is a waste. Who has ever done this successfully? Just switch the whole, I'm trying to think of anybody that has, when you talk, much bigger, much more established brands have had a hard time switching from, hey, we used to be print-based. Now, Sports Illustrated is in, I guess, bankruptcy or the tank or what have you, and got infinitely, or at one time, had an infinitely better brand than what Twitter has ever had. Look at the whole G4 debacle where, hey, we're on YouTube, but we're still cable TV. I'm just trying to think of anybody that has nailed such a huge transition, and I'm drawing a blank.
You know, you're not wrong. And the crazy part is, it's almost like Musk has just slowly changed the entire identity of the thing he bought.
Yeah.
And
not for the better.
I was just about to say that. And so far, not a single step has been for the better, right? Exactly. You've lost advertisers. You've lost users. You have more bots on the platform. Like, fewer people can link to it because the APIs are now broken and not working right or whatever. Right? It's just like thing after thing after thing. And like, none of these things have been stuff that, to my knowledge, even half of the people on the platform have applauded when you've made any of those changes.
Until, it's, I always say, you know, we're handicapping sports or anything else. Like, show me first. Show me, as you said, anything Elon has done since he took the platform over that has worked out the way he thought it was going to work. And most of the stuff he's trying to things like, you know, hey, look, you can pay for check mark. Just even the things that are comparatively small adjustments haven't gone over well. Now you want to fundamentally change what the platform is? No, this
and this is on top of having not just being able to pay, because like even, you know, paying the $8 or whatever at least gets you access to some things. But then there's also a different price you can pay for, I think, Twitter Premium or whatever that is to get you access to more stuff. But then also, if you have a certain level, you can now have memberships to follow you on Twitter. So like you can make special posts that only certain people can see. And that's a thing. So it's just like, what are we even doing? Like, what are we turning? Like, the stuff he wants to do almost feels like it wants a different UI even to work right. So like, I don't really know, but I'm out,
this is,
man.
Yeah. This is yet another, I think, crash and burn from the Muskinator.
Yeah. I'm not feeling it. Not feeling it. But that being said, that brings us to the dinner table. And there was a bit of news this week that went under my radar. I missed it entirely. And this is something you pointed out to me. So I'm going to let you take the lead on this. But apparently, Magic has its first trans masculine character.
Yeah, Outlaws of Thunder Junction is going to bring us Yuma. And Yuma's story is on, if you look for Magic, it's called No Tells. Because kind of course, everything in Outlaws of Thunder Junction is Western themed under Magic Story, written by Isaac Fellman. And basically, but people are already trying to cast Pedro Pascal as this character because apparently on arriving on Thunder Junction, Yuma has adopted a living cactus baby. Because, hey, we're talking about magic stuff here. So yeah, if you play Final Fantasy, it's not that easy. I think Final Fantasy also has living cactus creatures. But yeah, I think it looks super adorable. It's giving huge Mandalorian dad vibes. So yeah, if we ever get any of Magic's animated projects off of the ground, hey, maybe that is it, or, you know, maybe for a future movie, if we can actually, because again, it does sound like something Pedro Pascal would absolutely do. Which, yeah, and again, I saw it just trending all over, just the kind of, I guess you would say, LGBTQ Magic Twitter yesterday. That's how I found out. People are very, very excited. Just one of the Thunder Junction is going to be really interesting, hidden. It's going to be super popular. And again, for people that think, oh God, Magic's getting woke. Why are they doing this? This is not anything that was unheard of. In the Wild West, there's actually, whether you know it or not, the Wild West has a huge queer history. There are all kinds of recorded cases where somebody just kind of went as another gender and in many cases was not discovered until they died. Especially in the case of women, you know, dressing as men, because look at all the rights that women did not have in America in the 1800s. There were jobs you couldn't work. There were, you know, or you could work the same job and not get paid the same wages. You might get, you know, you might get jumped on the trail if somebody realized you were female. There's just all kinds of reasons especially for that to happen. So there's a huge history here that Magic is taking full advantage of. If you've seen The Harder They Fall on Netflix, which you haven't, great movie. If you like Westerns at all, please check that out. There's a character in there that kind of has that same journey. So this is, again, while you might think it's new, you might think it's woke. No, these are stories that happened throughout, not just America, but lots of other countries' histories. Like, Mulan is a hugely popular Disney tale for a reason, folks.
Yeah, and I think you're right across the board on that one. Like, I don't think people are aware that if you go through, there's multiple stories of women passing as men, because even if they just wanted to be part of like the different law enforcement agencies where they only hired men. So if you were in a town where people didn't know you, like, you try to pass as a guy just so you could be part of the job you wanted to do. And that's a thing that happened, you know, which is
numerous recorded cases of that happening.
Yeah. And people, I mean, it's not popularized in like television and movies, whatever, but it's definitely a thing. There's lots of stuff written about it.
We're starting to see a lot more of it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm all for it, you know, and even for Magic, we had Alesha as a character that was trans the other direction, but like still a thing, you know? So it's not like this is even new for Magic. Like we've talked about these characters before.
I mean, we're talking about a world where, you know, all sort of dragons and goblins and elves and things exist, but people, some prejudiced people want to think it's weird that somebody is trans. It's bizarre to me. Like, you don't care if somebody your fake character turns himself into a dragon or elf or whatever, but let anybody be transgender. And oh my God, Magic's on fire.
You know, funny though, especially for people our age, or even if you're probably 35 plus, like you grew up with like Boy George, Prince, you know, like
David Bowie.
Yeah, exactly. Like they were doing it before we called it anything. You know what I mean?
So
like,
many people have mentioned that, you know, David Bowie was their gay awakening or straight awakening. Just the moment when they realized sexual feelings was David Bowie, often in Labyrinth.
Yeah, so it's not like this is a new thing. Like, we have examples throughout our entertainment and pop culture and whatever for years. The people, hell, people had them on posters in their rooms. Right. You know, like, so come on. Like, really? Really, like, it's not that big a deal. It's just cool that it's a thing, that there's another character that people can relate to, and that's a good thing.
Bugs Bunny, you know, apparently his creator has kind of just embraced Bugs Bunny as a trans icon, because good Lord, how many times was Bugs remember the one where him and Elmer Fudd do the opera? I mean, come on. that is a whole love story right there with my magic helmet.
It just doesn't make sense to be upset over. Like, it's not gonna change your gameplay. Like, you like the game, you like the game, you don't like the game, you don't like the game. But again, this comes back to the stuff we talk about, right? If this is one more way that some group of people can just find something relatable and they enjoy the game that much more, that's better for all of us.
Right?
Wizards makes more money. We get more cards. They make more stories. More events happen. Your local stores make more money. Blah, 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 blah. Right? Like, so there's really no reason to be mad at this. If you don't like it, don't read it. If it's not your jam, whatever. It's a story. You don't have to read it.
If you're a straight white male, I promise you, you are in no danger of running out of heroes you can relate to.
Also true. Also true. But yeah, it's cool. I'm in favor. I think this is a really neat thing that it even happened. And honestly, calling a character Yuma, I mean,
also a great shout out.
Kind of cool. Like, if you know anything about Westerns, that's pretty sweet. Speaking of, let's close on this. What is your favorite Western of all time?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because I don't know this answer for you.
Probably Magnificent Seven.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one. For me, I think it's Tombstone. And mostly because it's like the Western that I think everybody can enjoy, even if you're not hardcore into Westerns. And a lot of that's carried by Val Kilmer. I mean, like, that's part of the reason. But man, so much of that movie is fun, quotable, has a little bit of a sad ending, but that's kind of the story of the character. So, you know. But yeah, really, really cool. So yeah, there you go. Some Western recommendations to end your night, afternoon on, whenever you're listening to this. But yeah, Brian, what's your brother? They can find you on socials while we wrap this up.
All right. I am Brian Sonic on Twitter/X, Instagram, and YouTube.
And you can find me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And yeah, as a reminder, if you want to help us out, please hit up our Patreon. Go over there, follow us, support us. We'll love you for it. And, you know, send some possible sponsors our way. We have some ideas. But as always, wherever you're watching or listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome, and most importantly, be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at Color of MTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.